Raising a Champion with John Boren.
All right, it's the podcast that provides a different perspective to youth sports, how to create a better environment, even with better coaches and better parents, and improving the game for everyone involved. You can always keep up with Raising a Champion by subscribing to us wherever you listen. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, or wherever you listen. It's much appreciated. So if you could subscribe to us, give us a review, we would certainly appreciate that, and goes a long way. My guest today is a Philadelphia icon, a member of the Philadelphia Eagles back in the late 70s. He joined the team on an open tryout by invitation from Dick Vermeil, later went on to become one of the captains of the Philadelphia Eagles, and his story inspired the movie Invincible, starring Mark Wahlberg. Welcome Vince Papale to Raising a Champion. Vince, thanks for joining us.
It's great to reconnect with you, John. I had such a great time when I saw you. It's awesome. Yeah, I'm real excited to be here. I don't know about icon. That sort of freaks me out a little bit. I was just a kid chasing his dream, that's all.
Well, and you did that, and it is a phenomenal story, and a lot of people obviously weren't familiar with the movie, which, by the way, came out in 2006, and here we are 16 years later. It's really almost hard to believe it's been that long.
Yeah, I know. It seems like it was yesterday. I was out doing an event, charity event yesterday for the police, and, you know, a bunch of the guys came up, and they said, hey, when did the movie come out? We just saw it. It's sort of amazing. Yeah, it came out right around Labor Day in 06, and You know what I really think keeps it alive is it's a timeless kind of a piece. It's dated because it goes back to the 70s. But it's Mark Wahlberg. You know, Mark is one of the, if not the hottest male actor out there in Hollywood. Now he's living out in Vegas. But, you know, Mark, and anytime he gets up, he's doing a promo for his movie, going through the junket, which was part of the process that I went through. He talks about Invincible as one of the first movies where he had a leading role. And so Mark, as much as anybody, has been keeping it alive, and it's got that great Disney tag. So, it's working pretty good. I'm still mentioning myself, John. It's pretty crazy.
So as part of Invincible, and obviously the main character in that movie, talk about how you were able to really build a brand off of that. You use that for sponsorships. You created a whole company when it pertains to motivational speaking. So get into some of that, your motivational speaking and the message that you send across when you do get up there and you talk to people from all different realms of society.
First of all, the word or the term invincible is a generic word. It's almost a Kleenex, you know, and I couldn't copyright the word invincible, but I do have a copyrighted kind of a logo, you know, so it's got the invincible with the 83 and it's in the shape of a football. But, you know, what it is the invincible brand is nothing more. The way I look at it, John, it's all about the dream, you know, and you can go to my website, VincePapale.com. And, you know, I've written a couple of three books, you know, I've got some stuff that I sell, you know, with the Invincible tag on it, those kinds of things. But, you know, I really use it so much for that. If anything, I use this Invincible brand, so to speak, as sort of a launch pad for speaking. And still 16 years later, you know, the message is still the same. Basically, it's overcoming obstacles, impossible obstacles, impossible odds, and, you know, what it takes to get there. And, you know, I've got to talk a little bit about how it happened and Mark Wahlberg and some of the funny things that happened and, you know, some of the experiences I had with the Philadelphia Eagles. But beyond that, and, you know, going all the way back, because the movie, when people see the movie and then they think, wow, they've got a pretty good pretty good idea as to who I am. But it really doesn't show. It shows a month in my life, you know, at a specific period. When they picked up the script and decided to take it when I was working as a part-time bartender and school teacher, a substitute teacher, and then they picked it up there. But they didn't go back. You know, they didn't go back to my parents not getting beyond the eighth grade with one of nine. They didn't go back to my mother's mental illness and being in and out of mental hospital. They didn't go back to the mentors, to the people that made a tremendous impact in my life.
Well, yeah.
And they're the kinds of things that I fill in the gaps, you know, when I'm talking.
And that's what we're here for, is I wanted to kind of to go back a little bit, because you were, your parents were first generation immigrants who came over from England and Italy, correct? Right. And your father, your grandfather, they were farmers. They were blue collar, hardworking kids. Your mother became sick a lot of your childhood.
Right. Yeah. She was just one of those things that happened. She was, oh my God, my mother was a fantastic athlete. That's the inside. And her father, my grandfather, worked for the Pennsylvania Railroad. And she was one of nine, but they never got beyond the eighth grade because of the Great Depression and World War II. But you know, everybody knows this movie, the great movie that's called A League of Their Own. Well, my mother was sort of in a league of her own, only they were playing hardball, and they had Mickey pinstripes and traveled down the East Coast, and they had a male catcher and a male pitcher and playing hardball. And, you know, and, and my dad never got beyond the eighth grade. His father settled with 13 acres right in those farmlands that used to be back there by the Philly International Airport. And he had, we call it a pig farm, hog farm. But, you know, that's basically how they sustained themselves during the Depression and prior to World War II. And, you know, mom and dad never got beyond the eighth grade. But, you know, my mother was such a giving person. She was a candy striper at a local hospital in suburban Philly. And she was in the oncology ward. And every time she'd come home crying all the time because one of her patients, one of the kids would pass, you know, because we're trying to find some way somehow to treat leukemia back in the 50s and 60s, and it wasn't working real well. And, you know, it had an effect on her, and then she got tetanus, tinnitus, I mean, ringing of the ear. And then she was like, she was the fixer in the family of those nine. And she took it on a little bit too much. And I came home one time and I saw her being taken out in a straitjacket, you know, when I'm like 12 or 13 years old. I'm telling you, it was pretty impactful. And, you know, what did they give her for treatment there? You know, electric shock, for crying out loud. I mean, that's how they were treating it back then. And she was in and out of Haverford State Mental Hospital. And I'm coming apart at the seams. My dad's working at Westinghouse. They're on strike half the time. You know, we're running out of money, you know, because of the drugs she had to take. And then eventually they were giving her all kinds of stuff to take. And she pretty much became addicted to prescription drugs. And you know, my dad's trying my dad's as well as could be, you know, loving us to death, but never telling us we're loved, you know, really my sister and I, we're sort of a little bit crazy. And my school teachers at Interboro High School, where I eventually wound up going back to teach, they were the ones that took me under their wing, and they mentored me and got me into sports, wouldn't let me feel sorry for myself. And, you know, you could use it as an excuse, but I use it as not even a crutch. I use it as something that just gave me strength. And if I was able to overcome that, I can overcome just about anything, including a Dick Vermeil training camp. So, you know, I wish the movie had gone there because it, back then, you know, to use the word mental illness, you know, it was just you didn't talk about it, you know. And now it's out there all the time, you know, and all kinds, whether it's on social media or the mainstream media, you know, people are talking about it. And it's something that really needs to be addressed right now because what's going on with COVID, had gone on with COVID.
Yeah, so the school system essentially saved you some of the hardships that you were dealing with at home, and you needed structure. Structure was important, and it didn't sound like that you were getting that at home. And that's where the school system stepped in.
Absolutely. You know, and I still need structure, you know, my son, Vinny, you know, he's a ball player, plays in the USFL. My daughter, Gabriella, you know, very, very successful now, 28 years, worked for the Sixers for 5 years. And, you know, we all need structure, but it's great because in our household, you know, I married a class athlete, you know, a gymnast, Janet Cantwell, you know, my wife now of almost 30 years, Janet Papali. And she's a coach and she's an athlete. And, you know, this kind of structure that we have in our house that I think keeps us going and, you know, enables you to overcome any obstacle or adversity that you face. But back then it was the school system and it was a whole different ball game though. You know, it's not the way education is now. We weren't controlled by the unions and, you know, we weren't controlled by social media, trying to make everybody feel good. Back then you either were or you weren't. You know, you won or you're lost. You won in between. And there certainly weren't any safe zones. They weren't for me anyway, but my safety zone was school. My safety zone was sports and was contact. You know, I loved being physical, even though I was such a little kid. And I wound up working to my advantage when I got to the NFL because, you know, it's pretty much a headhunter. And,
yeah.
The way I grew up, you know, it was survival, man.
Part of that survival technique that you had, you were playing in these Philadelphia Bar Leagues, and which, by the way, I don't believe you really started playing organized football until high school. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I played junior high school football 1 year, and my dad was my coach for the Glendale Indians in Glen Olden, Pennsylvania, in Delaware County. I'm looking at my Delco hat now. And, and anybody from the Philly area knows about Delco. But, my dad was my first coach, and I played little league football, you know. I tried soccer, but I kept getting yellow carded and red carded because I just wanted to hit people. And then eventually I got a chance to play junior high school football for 1 year. Went to go out for the high school team my sophomore year. I was just over 5 feet, a little bit over 100 pounds. And the coach looked at me, and he was a former Marine sergeant. And he said, "Now you're going to get killed out here." And then eventually my mentor of my life, George Corner, with my high school, junior high school phys ed teacher, got the head coaching job at the high school. And he reached out for me and says, "Come on out. I know you know, we don't normally take first year seniors." He said, "But come on out. I want you to be part of the team." And then when he saw, you know, that I could catch the ball, I was the fastest kid on the team. He actually redesigned the offense to feature a passing offense. And our quarterback, Jim Haney, set all the passing records at Westchester when he went there and got drafted by Minnesota. And, that's all because of this man, you know, and the impact that he made on our lives and made us feel important. But yeah, John, you know, to make the short story long, I got that 1 year in high school football. But then, you know, when I was doing what I was doing, I wasn't on anybody's radar. And so I played basketball, got a letter in basketball. And then coach came up and he says, "Hey, I just got the head track coaching job. And he says, "I'd love you to come out." "Ah, come on, coach. I'm done. He said, "Please." He said, "Just come on out for the team." So I went out for the team. And wouldn't you know it, I wound up getting a scholarship to St. Joe's in the pole vault. And I was a foot and a half off the world's record out of high school. I never pole vaulted before. You know, yeah. It's just, there was this pole and, you know, it just happened. It was just like it was an organic progression.
But here's what's really cool is St. Joe's didn't have a football team at the time. So you may be one of the few athletes, a few NFL alumni that has NFL football experience without playing collegiately. However, when you tell your story, the thing that we have to touch on is what prepared you for the NFL. And I think if you go back to those rough touch football games that you played in the Philadelphia Bar League, explain this rough touch football league, because from my understanding, it was more rough than touch, because you had an ambulance that was always out there in the event that somebody needed medical service, right?
We played in this field right behind the T-Bar in Delaware County, in Ridley Township, it was called, on Thursday nights. And, and I played in another league on Sundays. And I would actually, after get done playing a game on Sunday morning at 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock, would jump in a train and go watch the Eagles play in my rough touch uniform with my buddies. When the Eagles were playing at Franklin Field, I was a season ticket holder. And I was teaching at the same time, you know. So there was always that love for the game. But, those rough touch games, there was also usually a cop. There was always a fight that broke out, and somebody wound up getting splattered. And if you saw the movie, it was pretty much the way it was in the movie. You know, I mean, we're supposed to just touch. It wasn't the flag football. We didn't know anything about it. There was no flag football back then. You know, they threw a flag on you, but it wasn't flag football. And it was great. But hey, my quarterback was John Waller, for crying out loud. And he went on and to Temple University and set all Temple University's passing records. And then after he got out of Temple, he didn't get in the NFL. He winds up semi-pro football And I wound up, after the rough touch thing, I wound up playing for the Aston Knights in the Eastern Seaboard League. And I prayed for a six-pack of beer and a pair of Adele shoes. No insurance. It was sick. You know, there are the fun things that I really wish that the movie had gone back. But, you know, but the point they picked it up, you know, they did a great job. So I'm very thankful for that and, you know, for the investment they made in me. So it's been quite the interesting experience.
What gave you, I guess, the mental and physical edge to go from, like I said, these bar leagues were really your only, and what you just described was your only organized football that you had played until the tryout for the Eagles. And then you came out on the tryout, I think ran a 4.5 40, which really at that time was blazing speed. Now, you know, you see linemen running 4.5 40s, a 4.5 40, and you got a contract, but then you still had to make the team. Is that correct?
Yeah. I still had to make the team. I still had to get through training camp. It's funny when you say the 4.5, because somebody asked me yesterday. I was at an event. Actually, I played at a golf tournament for the police, survivors of fallen police officers. And we were playing at Trump International, and this guy asked me, he says, "Hey, what was your time in the 40? I said, "Well, I ran a 4.5. I said, "But on grass." I said, "Here, I want you to do something." I said, "Just run about 10 or 15 yards, because it was grass right where all the carts were." And he ran it in grass. Well, right behind the carts was turf. I said, "Now run the same 10 or 15 yards in turf." And he said, "Wow." He said, "It's a lot easier. You know, there's a bounce to it." I said, "So you take that 4.5 and put it on turf. You know, it's about 4.3, 4.4. And that was fairly legit. And, you know, saw it. This is the coolest thing, though, John, it didn't appear. But, you know, Disney gave me the opportunity to write a book. And a guy by the name of Chad Millman, who worked with ESPN. And we filled in all the blanks. So after that tryout, you know, Coach said, you know, do this, do that. And after the tryout, I'm in the Eagles locker room, and, you know, thinking, hey, I had a pretty good deal. You know, got a couple of passes, and, you know, Coach looked at me and said, "Nice job, Vince." And that conversation in the movie where, you know, how old are you? Where'd you, I told him I was 24. I told him I went to Temple. I thought, I didn't know Temple didn't have football then, you know, so they didn't have football. But I got called up to the coach's office 15 minutes after the tryout was over. And then he said, "Hey, the general manager, Jimmy Murray, wants to see you." And I signed a contract for $21,000. And I had two season tickets for 10 years. I said, "Do I have to give the season tickets? Can I give them up now?" He says, "Well, you know, don't be too premature. You still have to make the team." But this was the caveat. He said, "But now you are officially owned by the NFL in terms of your playing rights and stuff like that." And he said, "That means you can train here." I said, "What do you mean?" He says, "Yeah, well, we have a training facility downstairs." He said, "You can train here." So what I did is I started training, and I was able to work around my whatever substitute teaching schedule and everything else. And who the heck am I throwing the ball with or catching for? Roma Gabriel, for crying out loud. He was a quarterback for the Eagles then. And there's Mike Schmidt and there's Carlton. And these guys had this guy by the name of Gus Hoffling, who was a strength and conditioning coach. And he sort of fell in love with me, and he took me under his wing and got me ready for contact football. And, you know, between what Gabe taught me, between working out with these guys, I was, and then my track, you know, my track experience and decathlon experience and that kind of thing, you know, it was nothing for me to run 2 or 3 miles just to warm up. Because I knew how to create that base, because I had to be ready for all the sprints that I was going to be doing in training camp. You know, I had been something similar to that before in the World Football League. So I was ready, you know, but the thing was, am I really going to get the shot? You know, that was the key. You know, am I just this guy that he put in there, you know, 100 hours a week and Coach Ramil to come to Widener training camp, for crying out loud, you know, just to lengthen the lines a little bit, because he knows he's going to. He had a saying, "Nobody ever drowned in sweat." Man, we sweat a lot. But, you know, I had to get through that, and I did.
Yeah. So how did you get in that environment, you know, considering you didn't have college experience, you did play a little professionally, as you mentioned, and not be intimidated, not be overwhelmed, and not feel like, well, do I belong here? You were able to, You know, those mental aspects you were able to overcome. How did you do that? Because it'd be really easy.
Not quite.
Yeah.
Not quite. You probably are the first guy, John, that's ever asked that question. And let me tell you something. I got intimidated, but it was not when I first got to training camp, because I'm the old guy, you know, and I got Gabe throwing the ball to me, and I'm going against, they had no draft picks, if you remember, because Berge swallowed up about 15 first round picks when they got him from Cincinnati, if you remember that, my man Bubba Berge. And so the guys I'm going against are free agents and, you know, other guys that they're bringing in, and they're all in their 20s and 20, you know, 22, 23, and they found out that, first of all, nobody took me serious. I thought I was writing a book. I was there because the paper line had just come out, and there were a couple of reporters that would jump into training camps, you know, and try to tell the inside story. So nobody really took me seriously. And, you know, so that first week I was killing it. I was anything that had a different color jersey, I took out, and we were allowed to hit them below the waist and made sure, you know, I made sure that they felt it when I hit them. You know, they get pissed off. And, hey, what are you doing, man? I said, I'm just trying to make the team. Well, then, guess what? The veterans came in. And I was mentally, not physically intimidated, but mentally intimidated. Because now there's Billy Agnew. There's Bill Berge. There's Harold Carmichael. You know, there's John Bunning, Frankie Lamass. All these guys that you know, Tommy Sullivan, Silky Sullivan. These guys are my idols. I'm a seasoned promoter, John.
Yeah.
And I said, shit, you know, shoot, I can't hit them the way I'm hitting these knuckleheads that were here last week. And I backed off. And Coach Romeo grabbed me and he says, what's going on? You're not the same Vinny. I said, well, Coach, I said, these guys are sort of my idols, you know. He said, you're idols. And he ripped me a new one. You're idols. Jesus, we were 3-whatever last, or 2-10, 2-12. They had a 14-game season. He said, I'm going to give you 2 more weeks. Get your head out of your butt, and let's go. And I said, well, and there you go. So then I got Roma Gabriel throwing the ball to me. And then there's lines. Wide receiver line is, you know, 10, 15 guys in line. So I'd run a rep, and I'd catch a pass. I'd run downfield. Everybody would cheer because they were, you know, widers 6 miles from where I grew up. Everybody from my school, my touch teams and everything else were coming to watch. And then I would jump right in front of the line again because the guys, they were all tired. They were in such lousy shape. And so when they get to the film at night, here I am, I'm running 12, 15, 20 routes. I'm on film all the time. And Gabe's getting the ball out to me. So, and then I wound up, believe it or not, after 6 preseason games, leading the team in receptions and touchdown receptions. And I had been pretty pissed off if I didn't make the team after that. But I knew what Coach was looking for. He was looking for that role. The role was he needed somebody to replace Bobby Picard, who got picked up in the expansion draft when Seattle got picked, came into the league. So Picard was gone, and he was looking for that Bobby Picard. And I was the guy Coach Romeo had earmarked for that. I didn't know that. I found out later. But I was the guy. But in my mind, I thought, you know, I could be a Bobby Picard. And I guess I was because, you know, I made the team.
Well, and what's really cool is when you see success stories and see people coming from really long odds, there's something that motivates them. It's something that they take from their past where they've been told you can't do something. You're not going to amount to something. You're not going to. You're not going to contribute. And that was the case with you. And it is part of the movie. When your first wife left you a note where essentially it said, you're never going to go anywhere, you're never going to make a name for yourself, and you're never going to make any money. And you use that right to say, you know what, I'll show you, and that's all the motivation I need.
And I had a couple of other motivations, you know, and one was actually from my coach. And I'll give you this great quote that I use it all the time when I go out and speak. But the other motivation was my real love, too, aside from football, is I was kind of qualified for the Olympic trials in the decathlon. And I tried to get into the Penn Relays decathlon, and I couldn't get in. And I knew the coach, you know. I used to be a villain, you know. I mean, I knew the coaches at Penn. And little did I know at that time that my wife, Janet, was the head gymnastics coach at the University of Pennsylvania. I should have gone to her. But Anyway, and then I tried to get into the Drake Relays, and the Drake Relays wouldn't let me in. So my path to getting into the Olympic trials, because I thought I had I thought I had a score that would get me there, was blocked. And so that was a major motivation, you know. And then that's when I had the tryout. And yeah, that and so they I got a letter actually from somebody that basically, who do you think you are to try to get into our prestigious event? And this blah 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 blah, you know. So I kept those two letters and I framed them. And every I would wake up every morning and I'd see that. But here's the real thing is, you know, I was getting, you know, hey man, you're a good guy in a rough touch and all this stuff. But you know, you're never going to make it. You're too old. You never played football. You didn't play college football. You know, it's never been done before. Blah 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 blah. So I go to my mentor, my coach. You know, the guy. George Corner. And I said, hey, coach, I said, should I do this? He said, what do you mean should you do? Of course you should do it. I said, but you think I'll really get a shot at 30? He said, just what do you got to lose? And I had nothing to lose, John, because I was going to go back if I didn't make it. Interbro said, get this football crap out of your mind. You got a job waiting for you when it's over. So you don't worry about getting a job. You'll come back and be a teacher again, and you'll finish up your master's and do that and do the other thing. So that's basically, you know, that was all I needed. But here's this quote that Coach Ramil gave me. And this is what I use. And I use this as a centerpiece when I go out and speak. And it went like this. Happy are those who dream dreams and are willing to pay the price to make them come true. You know, so you got three things here. You got three layers. You got the dream. You have it coming true. Right in the middle, sandwiched in the middle, is the willingness to pay the price. Are you willing to be focused? Are you willing to sacrifice? Are you willing to give up other things in order to get to where you want to go? If you don't, you're posing. You're fooling yourself. You're fooling everybody. You're wasting people's. You're wasting a lot of people's time. And that was that. That's my message, and that's what he gave me. And I said, all right, coach, I'll give it a shot. And you know who reminded me? I'll tell you this. You're going to love this. I don't tell too many people this. Is I stopped using it for a while. I don't know why. And then Jay Wright. You know, Jay's my good buddy. We all know Jay from Villanova, right? I mean, one of the greatest college coaches ever.
Yeah, I'm trying to get him on the show. Yeah, I've been trying to get him on the show, and
I'll get him on the show. I'll get him.
Okay.
Yeah. So Jay's this guy's right here from college. And says, "Hey, man, I'm gonna give a speech to my high school, to wherever." And I said, here, use this quote. And it was that happy are those. And he built his whole speech around that. And so like, you know, 10 or 12 years ago, he says, hey, you still using that quote? I said, you know what? I'm not. He says, you might think about doing it. He said, people need that right now. So, you know, that's it. That's the one. That was a big motivating factor. But now, when your significant other tells you, you don't have what it takes. But I use that as well, because we've all been given that message at some point. And what are you going to do? You're going to feel sorry for yourself. You're going to get pissed off and prove them wrong. So my thing was I got PO'd and I'll do everything I could to prove them wrong. And I did.
So do you still have that note? Because that was what, 1971? We're talking that was 50 years ago.
No,
you got rid of it.
No. Yeah. That and my divorce papers. Yeah. So. All right.
But
yeah, it's okay, but it's definitely in my mind. You know, it's out there. I mean, come on, man, it's in the silver stream.
I got
it's
you.
Silver screen, so it's there.
So all this, yeah. So all this experience and it really created the person that you are today. Who you know, you're motivated by, being in the NFL, and now you have a son in Vidi Papale. Who's I think got a lot of your genes. He's a wide receiver, had a very successful career at the University of Delaware. I think he tried out, went to the Canadian Football League, and that didn't pan out because of COVID. Now he's in the USFL, but now take it as a standpoint that you're a father, and now you have all these life experiences. How did you share those? How did you incorporate those into Vinny's life to where he could be a successful athlete?
Well, I just try to be consistent with him, you know, and just be a role model for him, not so much as an athlete, but as a person, you know, to how you treat other people, you know, how you approach a specific obstacle, goal, or dream, those kinds of things. I was coaching him and showing him, I was convening through the drills that I was, when he was 6 years old, crying out loud. And I'm a firm believer in fundamentals, and I think one of his strengths is he's so fundamental sound. But and it's the same thing for our daughter Gabriella, And Abby was a pretty good athlete. She wound up cheering. She was at Syracuse University. Goes back to, and she did a lot of great stuff for the 76ers and for the NBA. And now came down here to Florida with us. And, you know, she's working with my wife in real estate. But we tried to, and Janet, and we tried to instill, because Janet was remarkable in what she did and how she got on the USA team. And we just try to be consistent and show them that there are certain paths and rules that have to be followed in order to have that path not be a rocky road, but also be a little bit smoother and, you know, have those dreams. And not that you're not going to have setback, you know, like, he's, you know, Vinny injury. I mean, he was about ready to be picked up, and they find a sports hernia, a double frickin' sports hernia, for crying out. Not just one, two. And he was playing his senior year at Delaware with it. Never complained about it. It was minor. But, you know, it kept him out of the draft. And he's still banging it out, trying to give it a shot. And, you know, he just re-signed with USFL and Todd Haley. And he's got a guy that coached in the NFL that beats in Vinny. So we'll see how it goes. But, you know, it's like in anything. When you're raising children, you know, you have to be consistent and allow them to go out on their own and, you know, sort of test the waters, give them a little bit of rope and, you know, see what happens. And, you know, I call ET, parent effectiveness training, and, you know, make mistakes, but, you know, you don't rip them apart, or you don't find a nice quiet room where, you know, with soft music so you can suck their thumbs and feel sorry for themselves. You know, you pick yourself up and, hey, listen, if you get knocked down 9 times, you better get up 10 times, you know? And I stole that from my buddy last night, Fast Eddie Fernandez, who's a pro golfer. He's 52 years old, and he gave me that quote. And I said, I'm going to use it the next time I tell somebody. So, but that's what it is, John. You know, you got to have structure and people that believe in you. And, you know, our kids, how much we believe in them. And so far, so good. They've been quite successful. I actually have I'm doing a podcast. We've already done a couple of them. We're ready to release it. And it's my daughter and I, it's the it's Gabby from her 28-year-old point of view, and it's Gabbing with Invincible. So there goes that Invincible brand, and, you know, so we're having fun with that. So that'll be coming out right after the holidays. That'll be we'll try to get Jay right too. How's that?
Yeah, good. I'm going to keep my eyes and ears open for it. What's the name of the podcast again?
Gabbing, G-A-B-B-I-N-G, Gabbing. Her name is Gabriella.
Oh, perfect.
Gabby is her nickname. Gabbing with Invincible. And, you know, she's been in front of a camera. Yes, matter of fact, yesterday she was interviewing all these pro athletes and the PGA players that we were playing with in this outing for the police. So, you know, she's getting her experience, and it's pretty cool. Just, you know, it's so cool, man. I didn't have my first kids since 47, you know.
Wow.
And it's just so great. They keep you young. Yeah, I mean, really, you know, Gabby's 28 and Vinny's 26. You can do your math. And it's just so cool. Now to see them grow up and mature and be responsible and, you know, and struggle a little bit too, you know, I always tell them, I said, man, when I grow up, I want to have a dad just like me.
So,
you know, being the kids of Invincible wasn't easy, you know, and I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. So when the movie came out, Vinny would have been 10, and how old was Gabriella?
Uh-huh. Gabriella, well, Vinny was not 10. It came out at 6. Yeah, Vinny was 10. That's right. He was when it came out. But when it was being filmed, Vinny was 6, I mean, 8, and Gabriella was 11, 10 or 11. So, yeah, that's when about happened. And then, you know, they're going to go from a public school to a private school, and there was cyberbullying going on, and Vinny was bullied by the football team, and you know, because one of the seniors was afraid that Vinny coming in as a freshman, you know, he was sound, you know, and they went after him. It was when he was a 14-year-old little boy, and 17, 18-year-old kids on the football team, not treating him the way anybody should be treated.
So it was rough. So when the movie,
Invincible was the
so voice. When the movie came out. And you obviously, you probably took your kids to the premiere of the movie, which was, I'm sure, was a great experience. But once they saw, once they saw the movie, though, did they look at their father a little differently? Did they say, wow, that was your story? And to see it, you know, in a Disney movie like that, were you able at that point then that they were able to probably listen and process the life messages that you had been teaching before that. Now they probably said, okay, now we'll start listening to you, Dad, now that you, there's a Disney movie based on your life.
Well, maybe. Yeah, maybe. You know, I'll have to ask that for Gabrielle when we do our next podcast. That's a good question. I think so. And it's really cool because, you know, when you see the movie put together, and I know you've been on set for movies, and they do it piecemeal, you know, and nothing's, it's all it is, it's basically like the pieces of a puzzle. And, you know, the final picture is right on the cover. You know, these pieces are all over the place on the table. And then eventually the director and the editor, I mean, this guy was a genius out there in Santa Monica. I watched how he created a couple of scenes. It was so incredible. And he puts it together. So the kids never really saw the movie. And Janet and I really don't talk a lot about our past. It's out there. And but when we saw the movie for the first time, this was before the premiere came out at the Ziegfeld Theater in New York City. We had a screening up in New York with Disney, with the NFL and a bunch of sponsors and stuff. And it's Mark and Gabby and Vinny are sitting right next to each other. And then it's me and Janet a couple rows before, and they're back there. And then I'm looking at the movie saying, wow, look how they did that. I mean, I never even really saw my story there. I was looking because I'm that, you know, like you, a TV guy. I've done a little TV. I was just so amazed at how they put that stuff together. But then at the very end, they had that black and white piece. And man, I broke down. And then behind me, Vinny, Gabby, and Mark, they're sobbing, you know. And then you realize, oh my God, this is our story. This is my story, and that's where we connected. So I think that's what had a great connection. But I'll tell you what, John, real quick, this is what really made a great impact, and it was Dick Vermeil's. It was Dick Vermeil's induction into the Hall of Fame. And we all went out to Canton, Ohio. Coach invited us. And we were at a hotel, Best Western Canton. And it was the Eagles Hotel. There were 15 or 20 alumni there. And every night we closed the common area, you know, with stories. And, you know, you've been there, so you understand what I'm saying.
Yep.
It's almost like the event we were at with firefighters, right? I mean, it was so much fun. But you know what? They started telling stories and saying, hey, Gabby, hey, Vinny, let me tell you about your dad. And they would start telling them stories. I think that more than anything, even now, just a couple months ago in June, July, made a greater impact than the movie was to hear what my teammates thought of me back then. Because, you know, John, I didn't even know that they felt that way. You know, I just, hey, you know, I just did what it was. And the movie was okay. You know, a couple of guys were a little PO. Well, how come they made a movie about him? I don't know. You know, it just happened.
Yeah.
But, you know, to have that happen, I think really had a great impact on my kids.
That's great. And what I think another element that we can really take out of your story is something that I think is lost in our current generation, because you see participation medals, you see how everybody's got to be successful, is you really learn about yourself in losses, and you learn about yourself in failures and when things don't go your way and dealing with adversity. In fact, that's going to be our quote at the end of the show. We'll get into that. But you can probably testify to this more than anybody that I've had on these shows about staring failure in the face, dealing with adversity, dealing with long odds, that overcoming when things break down to really peel yourself back up and find a way to plow through, because it's, everything about that's 100% mental. And if you don't have that, it's really hard to be successful. And no matter if you were a professional athlete in the 80s or professional athlete now.
You're absolutely true. And, you know, the mental side is so very, very important. You know, first of all, you have to separate the mental from the physical. You know, I knew that I had the skills to do it, but my thing was, is you can't get injured. You know, that's the one thing, you know, I mean, you just can't be hobbled up there. So now you put the injury thing aside, but then with all the other things, and when I go out and speak, and I do PowerPoint and video, I got some really cool videos, you know, and stuff. But one of the things, you know, what does it take to be invincible? And one of the first things is, you know, is tenacity and you've got to be able to pivot, you know, you have to be able to have your audibles and perseverance and communication. And it all comes down to being part of a good team and making sure that you that I always say teamwork makes the dream work. And, you know, who do you have in the team? And are they trustworthy? Can you trust them? And more importantly, can they trust you? And, you know, you put all those things together and you can just about get through anything. And, you know, my dad used to come every day to every practice to from Westinghouse in his Westinghouse Blues with his name Kingy on his shirt. And he would come and watch the end of the afternoon practice. And then we'd all go out and he'd come out with my teammates. We'd all go out to this place at Widener right there in Chester and have a couple beers. And my dad would just come there with me and just settle me down, you know, just to have him there and knowing what he had to deal with, you know, with my mother's mental illness, with all the things he had to deal with, was being one of mine and, you know, what it was like to grow up and all that. And he didn't say a lot, but he was just that calming influence. And to have him there like that and to see him smile and be so happy and so proud of me, because I didn't realize how proud he was of me. He was proud of me whether I made that team or not. And, you know, I was a successful school teacher, coach at Interbrook. I just had a reunion with our Delco track championship team. And, you know, but you have to have all those things. And you hit it right on the head. It's more mental than anything. You know, assume that, you know, the physical side was a given. I knew I had the skills, but I wasn't quite sure whether I'd ever be get ready to go through the stuff, but I was. And I surrounded myself with some good people. And Dennis Franks, you know, my dear friend Dennis Franks, God bless his soul. I lost him this past October. And, oh, man, you know, to miss him. But without him, I couldn't have done it, you know, could not have done it.
Yeah. When parents come to you and say, you know, give me some advice or something that I should share with my kids, maybe they want you to impart some of your wisdom because you have a lot of it. I really think that people born in your era, your generation, are built a little bit different. And you just see it over the years. It's we don't have the distractions that you did have the distractions back then that you have now. And but what do you tell parents? You know, maybe CEOs. I think that, you know, when you're speaking on behalf of companies, CEOs will come up to you. How do I inspire my coworkers? How do I inspire my colleagues? What do you try to impart in that situation?
Well, you know, first of all, I think consistency is a certain key. You know, you have to be consistent in everything you do and, you know, how you're raising your child, you know, how you go about doing business, how you go about being a leader, you know, being a good example. I wasn't a real rah-rah guy on the field. But I led by example. Nobody worked harder than me, and I dare anybody on the Eagles when I was there that said they worked harder than me and Denny Franks. So that was the one. So it's being an example thing. I have a lot of people come up, and you know, I get texts or calls from people all the time. Hey, would you do a 15-20 second video? Son, they got a football game. They got this going. They're going through a tough time. You know, I know you're a cancer survivor. Hey, could you talk to this person? They just started chemotherapy. And I do that all the time. But more than anything, it's just that, you know, you really have to be strong mentally and have a good attitude and surround yourself with the right people. And, you know, with parents and kids, and I'm our children today, these kids, I tell my kids, thank God you're beyond them. I know where you are, but it's not going to be an easy path for you because of the way you think about certain things. And you better be prepared because, you know, those blind sides are the ones that are the worst because, you know, you can't prepare for them in the life. But, you know, the way to prepare is just believe in yourself and make sure you surround yourself with a good team and be consistent and you know, and listen and communicate. Yeah. And, you know, be trustworthy. Yeah. And, you know, there's just, you know, let them be able to trust you.
Yeah. Well, anyway, you have a good,
I look at it.
Yeah. And you have a good team. I mean, your wife, Janet, was a member of the U.S. Gymnastics team. And in fact, I think you're the only married couple to have been that you're both inducted into the Pennsylvania Sports Hall of Fame. So what I think that the message there is that if you are married and, you know, your situation was different as a kid growing up, but the importance of having a unified front, and you guys shared a common bond, and it took you a while to find that special person that shared the same values that you had.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it did. You know, it wasn't easy. And, you know, and I might have been just as bad as anybody, you know, in that search. And just when you don't, you know, when I thought maybe, I don't know if that person's going to be out there, she disappeared. speaking of, well, she's trying to get on me. But anyway, you know, it is what it is. And I lucked out, as I say, I outkicked my coverage. And, you know, and I just see how strong she is, what a great example, and how caring she is. And, you know, I call it the SPCA, you know, for the Society for the Prevention of Human Beings, you know. I mean, she just brings so many people into our life and so giving. And she's a great example to my kids. And now, you know, we have the Papawi group, and it consists of my children. They're all realtors now in three states and quite successful. And we're forming a team around the East Coast. And, you know, that's another one of it's just, here we go. You know, I'm in my 70s. Janet is getting up there a year or two. And but we're starting a new dream. And we want this to be the legacy for our kids. But they see it. You know, they see it. So, you know, they don't roll their eyes or come up and say anything with me, you know. And actually, people say, hey, you know, can I get a picture with you? My daughter, Gabby, or Vinny will say, hey, I'll take it for you.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, that's the way they are. Percy is to roll their own. Now they're used to it.
Yeah. I didn't even mention you are a colorectal cancer survivor, overcoming that. And the importance, yeah. I'm sure that you tell people, of getting colorectal screenings, especially as you get into your 50s. What's your thoughts, though, now on the game of football? You know, whether it's the NFL, but more on the youth level, because there's. You're starting to see a decline, I think, in participation, the concerns over long-term brain mm-hmm. injuries and things pertaining to that. Yet here you were. I'm sure you sustained a few injuries in some of your rough touch football games in the Philadelphia Bar League. But what's your take on youth football? Because you had a son that's gone through it. The way that it's implemented, are we right in terms of holding back you know, some of the physical element of the game, tackling, or have we gone about it the wrong way?
Well, you know, I think some of the rules that they've changed in the NFL, I'm not all that crazy about it. I, you know, hook your calls, and I just think, well, that was common part of the way we played the game. And, you know, now because there's so much an investment, there's a lot more that's going on in the game than the game itself. You know, they're allowing corporate, they're allowing politics, they're allowing all these things to creep into the game other than just, hey, let's go out and play this game, you know, win or lose, and this is what the rules are going to be on the field. But, you know, that's changed in that respect. But, you know, for youth football, youth sports, you know, now, of course, the big rage is soccer, which is great. If anything, I don't think kids, if they went to that next level, have to play youth football. You know, they could survive with another sport. And then eventually, as they get older, you know, get into the high school level, if they have good coaching and capable people around them, they can survive, you know. But it's you got to be careful now with all that's going on, and you know, with the head injuries, and there's a greater awareness of that, and as it should be, you know. And you can see it in the NFL. You know, a guy takes a big hit, the referee can't see it at real time speed, but then Hollywood will call in after they've seen it a couple of times and say, hey, this guy looks like he's on another planet. Now his belt just got home. You know, and back in our day, John, you know what they do. We take a couple smelling salts and we put it in our nose and take a couple sniffs. And then somebody would come up and say, how many fingers do I have out? And they'd have two. We'd say five. And hey, what day is it? Hey, it's Tuesday. Yeah, you got it. What's your name? Albert. Okay, you're fine. Boo, and you go in. And I'm not, that's just the way it was, you know. But now there's a greater awareness of this. And I think rightfully so. You know, you just got to find that balance. But right now, I don't think we found that balance. It's coming. But Everybody's got to be patient, you know, and hang in there. But you got to take care of the kids. That's more important than anything.
Yeah, and really taking care of long-term health. I hate to see NFL athletes who put it all out there suffer from something so debilitating like CTE and Lou Gehrig's disease, because, you know, they have such a full life, and the thing is that they know what's happening to them. They just can't do anything about it, and it's just so painful and just so devastating to watch. And I really hope that that's where the league continues to make strides, because as far as I'm concerned, you can't do enough to, I think, protect the health. I mean, look, the athletes know, and it's unfortunate that when you go down or you're out for an extended amount of time that somebody's going to step in and take your job. And that's, you know, that happens in all realms, corporate life, everything, but not at the expense of somebody's health. And so that's where I think we hope that everything improves.
Well, you know, I remember when I first got into the league and I went to that, this was back in 76, and I went to my first NFL Players Association meeting, and where we were, and I forget who the president was, but he played for the Oakland Raiders, and he says, you either retire, you get injured out, or you get retired, which means you get cut from the team. But none of us, you know, because you're not used to the word invincible, but, you know, when you're out there, you're feeling invincible, you know, and that's the last thing you want to think about. And there was, back then, there was that certain amount of pride that you felt because you played through an injury. You know, you're always hurt, you know, and it's 100% guaranteed that you're going to be playing with an injury. But, you know, those days are gone now. And I think, especially with head injuries and stuff of that sort, you know, and look, man, I just came right from here. I just came from a chiropractor. You know, Mark Wahlberg gets a chiropractor from that one hit he took in the movie. you got to take care of your body, man. And I'm doing the best I can to take care of mine right now. I got a lot of fun from watching my kids grow up.
Well, and you're down in Jupiter, Florida, so you got to take care of that body because you got a lot of golf to be played.
Oh man, I tell you what. I played that international yesterday. My God, and I played with a pro, Owen Brown, and oh my God, I just watch him swing, and you know how beautiful it is. Yeah, it's fun down here. So there's a lot of great athletes here. You know, I almost wish that maybe it would have been a little bit different if we raised our kids down there. What an edge they have with all the beautiful facilities and the weather here. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. All right. Vince Papale, the movie Invincible, came out in 2006. If you have a library of movies that you want to show your kids someday to really inspire them, put Invincible on the list. I have that up there along with Miracle, The Blind Side, The Rookie, some really good movies. The Natural, I love, is a classic as well. But Vince Papale, a captain of the Philadelphia Eagles back in the late 70s, the man, the legend, there's no myth about him. He's nothing mythical. It's all legendary as it pertains to Vince Papale. Vince, thank you so much for joining us on Raising a Champion. I really appreciate it and love talking to you. We do, you know, any chance we get the chance to connect, you know, I really just love to pick your brain on everything.
Well, I appreciate reconnecting. That was so cool to get to see you last month when I did our event up there.
Yeah.
So it was in Bucks, you know, so it was great. And when I, John Borg, oh my God.
Oh, please.
You know, I mean, you were a mainstay with Tomcat back there. So anyway, hey, it was great to reconnect. You're making a difference.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be giving, every week I do this thing. It's called Invincible Insight. And you can get it at VincePapale.com. And I say something, and one of it is giving back, and that's what you're doing right now. You're giving back, especially right now, how important it is in our time with all that's going on, and also with the holidays, because there are going to be a lot of people, there are going to be a lot of pain because they've lost loved ones. And so don't forget them. Don't forget them.
So, yeah, it's a good message. And as we like to wrap up every show with our quote of the week, this week, most people don't expect adversity. Then they get surprised by adversity, and as a result, they're defeated by adversity. A better approach, expect adversity, prepare for adversity, overcome adversity. Adversity is guaranteed. What you do with it is up to you. All right, thanks for joining us on Raising a Champion. Remember, please subscribe to us wherever you listen, Spotify, Google, Amazon Music, Apple, iTunes, you got it. It's all out there. Thanks for listening. I hope you'll join us next time.
You've been listening to Raising a Champion with John Borak.